When it comes to your sales stack, stop tool hopping and start winning with Nux. Simplify your outbound today at nux.ai/salesgravy. That's nooks.ai/salesgravy.
This is the Sales Gravy Podcast. Hi, I'm Jeb Blunt, best-selling author of Fanatical Prospecting, Objections, Sales EQ, and Inked, and I'm here to help you open more doors, close bigger deals, and rock your commission check.
Welcome back to the Sales Gravy Podcast. I'm Jeb Blunt Jr. We've got my favorite LinkedIners and some of my favorite guests for the Sales Gravy Podcast. They wrote a book called Sales is Therapy. It is a great, great book. I've watched the progress of your work. This is Jack Frimston and Zach Thompson. I have to read their names if they're next to me because otherwise I get them mixed up. But they are some of the leading voices in the new business development space, especially in the UK, in Europe, but now even getting into the US market. So welcome back to the Sales Gravy Podcast, guys. Glad to have you back.
Great to see you, Jeb. We missed you, Jeb.
I'm glad. I don't hear that a lot. What I thought we could do today, which would be fun, because if you follow Jack and you follow Zach, one thing you'll notice about their style on LinkedIn is if you act like a LinkedIn dork, they will find you and you will know it very, very quickly. And I find it to be like one of the most refreshing things about the LinkedIn community is both of you, your approach to authenticity, how you sort of articulate the funny nuances of a social media world in which, you know, people are either boasting too much or like being way too humble, but not really at all. And then also, you know, making sure that people see that there are normal human beings that exist on the internet. Normal is an interesting word, but you know, people who see through kind of the veil. So kind of, I'm going to throw it to you, Zach, since you have just bought a house. So congratulations to you.
Thank you, Chef.
And all the successes that go along with that, including fun social media posts that get a lot of engagement. As you're existing in the LinkedIn space, you kind of see the landscape of it all. How do you go about creating an engaging, I guess, experience for both you and people who follow you, but also kind of tongue-in-cheek, being a real person in that world?
My advice to people listening who are trying to do this would be rent a Lamborghini, borrow a Rolex if you can. If you don't have a really attractive partner, like you can ChatGPT, edit them back into the picture, and then post pictures talking about your success, particularly in personal branding. Personal branding is so vague. No one really knows what it is or how to do it. And it's really easy if you post those things, the rented Lambo, the borrowed Rolex, to say, join my course. I'd normally charge $1,997 for a course like that. A figure like that typically makes sense and makes people think that it's worthwhile investing in. So that would be my advice for engagement. And then just post that every day, you know, different sides of the rented Lambo from there. And I think that's a real ticket for success on LinkedIn.
So we all know these posts, the rented Lambo, the terrible angles. Jack, there's this one guy who comes specifically to mind, and it's the people who move to Dubai inexplicably and then tell you that Dubai is the only place you should be living because of money. It just is that personal branding really strange that you have a Lamborghini, though they don't leave their apartment, it seems like. And they're doing those terrible like selfie videos of them talking to the camera, but you're not exactly sure what they're saying. They're just talking. A lot of sentences that go in circles like this. You bring up that's a great way to be successful. I think tug-in-cheek, Zach. I'm if you're watching the YouTube video, he's like shaking his head, like, don't do that. But Jack, you see these all the time. You also engage with them. There's so many of them. Do you think it's a real way to start building success as someone in the business world by doing that? There's got to be some reward system that happens for that kind of lunacy on LinkedIn.
I mean, the first thing to do, Jeb, is to define what success is. I mean, in the modern world, most people define success as, Zach said, a Lambo, a Rolex, a pretty wife. But actually, maybe having a Hyundai, a Casio, and an ugly wife, maybe that can be successful. If I lived in Dubai and I was trying to do post, I'd be saying, it's too hot. It's too hot here. It's far too hot. Why are you here? But I think like it's the psychological principle of keeping up with the Joneses, isn't it? Which is existed in sales for so many years. It's the same element of they've got that. It's not, I don't want to be them. You don't look at somebody in a Lambo and think, oh, I want to be him. It's just, oh, I want what he has. But actually, and you know it from most people, if they do have the Lambo and it is all true, I would probably say that there's a reason. There's probably like some childhood trauma that they're trying to cover. And a lot of the time it is completely fake. And the reason is like people go, oh, I want that. If they've got that, then hopefully they can get me from A to B, which is all sales. It's the fear of missing out. So I think it's a sad world that we're living in, but I think it's probably always existed in some sort of fashion.
I see it. And it's interesting in the places in which these posts are most frequent, personal branding, but also in new business development. So people who have held an SDR job for like 3 months and they hit their first quota and now they are the LinkedIn expert at how to bring in more meetings to their calendar. You know, little do you know, if you are not aware of the background behind this person, none of those meetings have ever gone to sale yet. Like there's actually no opportunity for them to have closed. So, you know, they're speaking from a place of false bravado, you could call it that, or, you know, the false confidence. You know, I wonder in y'all's opinions of this, I think of this development on LinkedIn and social media, being experts in the space for, you know, nearly a decade now, you've been doing a lot of this work yourself before you could post a bunch of things cool like that on LinkedIn. As you are working with clients, as you are working potentially with new salespeople who are looking for coaches of some kind, or they're looking for a business that outsources their outbound dialing to a company like We Have a Meeting and what you all do, what are some of the red flags that you would just want to highlight that seem very common knowledge to us, but might be really important for somebody who's like trying to make a decision about their business? What are the red flags of following someone who is only existing on social media as an expert?
There's a few things in what you just said, right? So one is people who are attracted to that sort of thing tend to, they want the view, they don't want the climb, right? So they kind of want the result at the end and not the climb. So probably the first principles thing is ask yourself why you feel the need to follow these sorts of people anyway. The other thing is the people who are really successful, like I'll give you an example, Jeb. There's a guy in the UK, he's in our space. He runs a B2B unicorn in the UK. He started his way up cold calling, so doing what me and Jack and a lot of young salespeople have done, worked his way up the ranks by an equity in business. He's now a billionaire. His name's Dean Forbes. I guarantee most people listening to this will be like, who's that? I've never heard of him. And if you try and follow him, he's not trying to push a course to you at all. You can probably listen to one of a few podcasts. He'll give you really good advice, but he's not trying to sell you anything that arguably you should be able to do yourself through, you know, learning, reading books, getting on the phone. Often people are trying to push them in. And you just raised a really good point there, Jeb. There's people that the three of us all follow and make fun of on LinkedIn who post, here's my formula, like this, here's my course. They push a course to you. But when you look at their LinkedIn, they've probably not been on the phone for 10 years. All their opinions are completely outdated. I can think of a guy that Jack takes the mick out of regularly on that front. To kind of summarize, I think real wealth and knowledge is often much quieter than people expect. And people who are pushing stuff on you, trying to make you feel like an idiot, and at the end of it, it's buy my course. You're an idiot, buy my course. Avoid those people at all costs.
Jack, you are one of the premier cut someone out at the knees in a social media comment guru I have ever met in my life. You have to follow Jack. It can be like a secondary comment. It's usually not even his first comment on the post. It's the one that he responds to the person responding to his comment. It eviscerates people, but in the kindest way. If you don't know you're being made fun of, it doesn't look terrible, but it is truly art. As someone who kind of engages with this part of LinkedIn, because genuinely it is a good way to get a laugh, and there aren't a lot of, you know, consequences necessarily for doing it in the way that you do so. Engaging with these people, is there a line that you kind of draw for yourself that says like, look, I'm on LinkedIn and I post 10 times a day and I see this idiocy, you know, for more hours than most people care to? Do you draw a line of like, okay, I'm having fun and I'm going to engage with their content and give them maybe more likes and views and whatever, versus like, okay, this is now, like, I can't give this attention in order to keep it hopefully in the dark longer. Do you have to draw that line at any time while you're engaging?
I think the rule of thumb is like, and it's a rule that Jimmy Carr talks about in comedy, and I try, and sometimes it's hard because you see some real idiots on that space, but I always try and like punch up. When I was first on LinkedIn, my whole thing of like, how do I get attention? Oh, I know what I'll do. I'll go in and I'll piss off a load of American sales trainers. Looking back now, if I could change my strategy, I probably wouldn't have done that, because I maybe like burnt some bridges and there's some people that won't come on the podcast, or they won't engage with us, or they've blocked us, whatever. But I think, like, as we've grown and I see younger, newer people coming through the space, there's a time and a place to say, like, just be careful what you're saying there, because that's quite stupid. But then I also remember, like, some people are young, so you want to be, like, careful what people are saying. But I think, like, you see so many seasoned professionals spouting things as if it is fact or truth. Listen, we're all guilty of it as well, but, like, that's the thing about sales. There are many ways to skin a cat. There are different ways to say it. I'll probably get involved in, like, the personal branding stuff. I'll probably get involved in, like, the sales stuff. But a lot of stuff, I'm like, you see it and I go, there's some stuff that I've sent to Zach and I'm like, this is what I would say, but actually that could just be misconstrued as bullying.
Yeah, it's definitely the hardest thing to do, especially on a professional site like LinkedIn. And I see, like, people do this really, really well. I want to shout out somebody named Outbound Bob. Bob is the guy who has been at Outbound every single year since we started this. And he is ex-military, always thanking for the service he did, because he did a lot of stuff for our country. And he is truly one of the most, like, dry sense of humor individuals I've ever come across. And on LinkedIn, he's a lot like Jack. And I find that unless I'm going to hold myself to a standard of a Jack or Bob, or, you know, if my comment doesn't exist in the realm of their wittiness, I probably need to take it back to the drawing board. And at that point, I probably need to not say it at all. So that's sort of how I draw my line. I see Jack's comment and I go, can I be funnier than him? No, I'm out. Like, that's it. That's where I go. I thought that we could do some Hall of Shame stuff today with the group here. Y'all react to this. I want you to write your first comment and say it to us. Whatever your comment would be on LinkedIn, I want you to say it to
God,
us.
Oh, God, this is fun. This is challenging.
So this one is a fun one. It says, no profile picture, computer science plus finance at Berkeley. So I know I'm going to get something really cool out of this post. My legal name is math. Yes, like the subject. But my son's name won't be. He'll be named Massimo. Growing up, my parents didn't have industry connections. No shortcuts, no warm intros. Weird thing to bring up in the middle of this post, but okay. The world only keeps getting more competitive, so I've decided to get ahead of it. Revolutionary. I've already created his LinkedIn account. He's already created his son's LinkedIn account. I don't even know if the son is potentially going to exist. He says he's just going to name them Massimo, created a LinkedIn account, and he's not even conceived yet. Oh, confirmed. Not yet. Call it insane, call it preparation, call it generational leverage. Either way, little Massimo is networking early. Dash written by Speechify voice typing. No way.
Give me pi to every decimal. How's that for math?
How does that compute? So my legal name is Matt. I just want to go through the logic of this post. Like, this is something that you see, and it's like, these are very extreme examples, but guys and gals, LinkedIn is full of, like, less atrocious posts that follow the same formula. This person's name is Matt. What does that have to do with any of this? Naming his son Massimo. What is his parents? He brings up, there's a full paragraph about your parents not having industry connections. Why? I can't fathom why that's part of the story. You created a LinkedIn account for your unborn child. That is the only part of this that matters. And weirdly, I don't think it matters. Not only that, they didn't sit down and type this because they couldn't be bothered. They then said it out loud into an app, so it's digital forever. We're going to do another one. So your first comment, this is a co-founder, so buckle up. If you see anybody with co-founder in their name, I'm looking at both of you too, as co-founders. I'm looking at co-founder in a name, I have big red flags. They already pop up. Most people think that they are playing the long game. Almost none of them actually are. Bold. Yesterday, I received the weirdest call of my life. We just offered a 17-year-old a job after completing a massive challenge in a very short period of time. I won't bore you with the details. I'm not even halfway through this message, but he's not going to bore us with any of the details, by the way. I won't bore you with any details, but he is the most gifted 17-year-old either of us have met. I would love to hear the details of what this man thinks a gifted 17-year-old has. Like, that's just not something you could put on the internet.
Are you allowed to hang around with 17?
That was going to be my plan.
Absolutely.
That's all right.
Not as a co-founder. No, unless it's your own child. You need to get
Massimo.
Unless it's your unborn child, Massimo. The phone call went like this. Chris, I guess, is this person's name. Chris, extremely grateful. All that good stuff. But after I pay off my car and I want to renegotiate my salary, this is the 17-year-old, I'm assuming is Chris. This person says, I'm sorry, what do you mean by that, mate? So he's presumably from your side of the pond.
It's pretty self-explanatory, though. After I paid off my car, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, he has a clarifying question. Because good at sales, hashtag good at sales. He asked a follow-up question. What do you mean by that after paying every car? He says, I don't need that much money. I've worked out that I can live off far less and I want it to be lower. I'm more interested in equity and playing the long-term game. This kid's 17 years old. I'm assuming this is a made-up phone call, but either way, why are you trusting the 17-year-old's opinion about what their long game plans are? The co-founder says, I was so shocked I started laughing. I've never had a phone call quite like this in my life. And this is exactly why you are one of a kind. The conversation went on. Does it? No more details. He wanted to spare us all the details. Most people his age are asking how fast they can earn more, whereas he was asking how long he can stay in the game. Because that's valuable. And that's exactly why we hired him. Not because he is gifted, plenty of people are. But because at 17, he already understands what most people never learn. Give more than you take early on and earn the right to stay in the room long enough for it to pay off. Welcome to the team, at Chris Mansour.
Right, I'll tell you what's happened there. I'll tell you exactly what's happened. He's a co-founder, so he sat down with his other founder, and they've gone, I've just got off the phone with the recruiter. He said, we're not offering enough money for people in the industry. And he said, right, how are we going to get more people through the door? Post that, that's going to make it sound like a great place to work. And then when people say, oh, but you don't offer that much money. Yeah, but Chris did it.
Look what we
That's
did
the
Chris.
Game, innit?
So I guess it's successful in some way.
Police will be on that.
How many 17-year-olds can we get into our business? Yeah. You know, like this is...
You wear a schoolboy outfit on the first day as your place, Chris.
I'm head boy at... Can you put that on LinkedIn? Head boy at Sales Gravy? Like, is that what I should start putting myself as? So... Your theory is that he talked to his co-founder, they talked to a recruiter, they said, we're not offering enough money, we need to do something to get more people through the door, and he sat down. How long do you think he sat down and contemplated this post?
I mean, he doesn't seem like an intelligent man, so maybe not that long.
Not long, or you would doubt that.
I think it took him too long. I think it was like a 3-day, like he had several shower, like thought processes.
God, I hope not.
I'm betting this was a wild ride for this person because he put that up and hit enter and he like did one of these. If you're on YouTube, I'm like putting my hands way behind my head and looking at me, he's like, yeah, that's it right there. Do you think it worked?
What about the bit where he just keeps saying, but this is how I know you're one of a kind, but he's not mentioned it previously.
One of a kind. How many 17-year-olds do you have to have a conversation with for someone to be one of a kind?
That is not good for a 17-year-old ego either.
I don't think so. Like, this kid's stupid enough to take less money. Hire him. I don't think that both of these people know how capitalism works. I'm not sure that they understand that they need to maximize their inputs and outputs in the right way. All right. So, Jack, I want you to pick one that you sent over to us. And, Zach, you're next after this, if you would like to be. And let's do a first comment on the one you bring up.
All right. Let me find one. Here we go. This is good. This is in the bio. It says 175,000 followers on Instagram, which I always think, don't judge me for hearing crap on LinkedIn. Yeah. I went on a New Year trip with my partner and a dog bit me. Straight away, I'm in. I mean, I don't care. I'm liking it. We're in. What made it harder to process was that I'd already petted 6 or 7 dogs during the trip. Very Alan Partridge. Nothing had happened. So when I reached out again, I didn't hesitate. I thought I was safe. I wasn't. What followed was panic. I cried, I froze, I crewed, fear took over. My partner didn't. While I was overwhelmed, he stayed calm, quietly taking control, getting me where I needed to be and making sure I was okay. A week later, everything is fine. But the real question is, will this make me scared of dogs? No, because one moment doesn't undo years of love. And fear doesn't get to rewrite who you are. It just teaches you to be more aware and more grateful for the people who stay steady when you can't.
Wow. That's
What's the question? What is the lesson there?
That's the real question is, am I going to be afraid of dogs? No, the lady, the real question is, on your trip, you pet six or seven dogs? That
why
is
he
just
keeping count?
Rude.
Why are you keeping count of the dogs?
If you reach out a bunch of dogs, one of them might get you. Like, that's just odds. She didn't fall off a cliff. She wasn't attacked by a pack of dogs. That's a story. That's a story about how you can, your partner can take over, and then you can learn about your fear levels and what you're gonna, what it's gonna take away from you. One dog is like, why did your hand smell like beef? You know, that's on you, I think. Zach, what did you get from this? Did you learn anything from that post?
I learned that people shouldn't take drugs and go on LinkedIn. That's what I learned in that post.
That's a perfect first comment. You shouldn't take drugs and go on LinkedIn is an incredible just copy paste. I think like, sounds like you should like cats more. That's I'm gonna lock that one in.
I'd say so. She'd be like, what was the dog's name?
Did you get all their names?
You know what I want to study? When people post stuff with like their wives and partners, just post clearly AI as the first comment.
What is it? Where you just clearly when people AI. Post photos of their kids, just put AI slop underneath.
Yeah. AI slop. I don't think that's real.
I'm going to post my child next week. If anyone doesn't comment AI slop, you fail. All right, Zach, you got one for us.
For you. This is the classic, right? So you guys will get what's going on here. So I'll give you the first bit and then I'll give you the last bit. This morning, I had a random person flip me off and yell at me fascist as I was waiting to pull out of a parking spot in my Cybertruck. My child was in the car. You people who think it's cool to hate on Tesla owners, you're the problem and you're the cowards.
Very good.
That's just the Tesla truck. That's classic. Down here, we got the in the South, we got the big old trucks. Yeah, 40-inch wheels. They call it the Carolina squat. And so what that means is they can't see over their front hood to the road. They sit the truck back on its rear axle. And it's illegal because obviously no one can see anything because their headlights are right in everyone's eyes. And then they can't see anything. So it's a terrible thing. Definitely compensating for something is going to be my first comment on the Tesla guy being angry at someone yelling fascist at them. Yeah, that's a crazy response to then spend time on LinkedIn.
It's especially because it probably didn't happen.
Yeah,
it's just someone wanting to go, I make enough money to afford
it. Definitely didn't happen.
Yeah. It didn't happen, did it?
No, because you can't hear anything inside of that car.
No.
It's a soundproof vehicle. How are you going to hear anything? Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was made up. Jack, what is your first comment on that post?
I'd just be stupid. I like going slapstick with it. Like, wait, what's a Tesla?
Oh, yeah, that's good.
It's a Tesla? Wait, do you like Tesla? Like, are you a big fan of? You know, it's just something.
Or just something like, I don't agree with his views, actually.
So I think that there's something here that's so fundamental to cringe LinkedIn. And these are pretty funny, extreme examples. But I mean, I see this all the time with people who do, like, I just did a job transition post where I was like moving from one role into another. And I just kind of wanted to announce it because I think it's important for marketing reasons, but I didn't want to be like crazy LinkedIn-y. But it's hard to like ride the line of let's provide something funny, humorous, but also updating and maybe marketing, and maybe it has some of that corporate stuff into it. I get it. Like, we all have to do this at some point. But the line is so thin before you cross into cringy corporate speak that has gobbledygook and doesn't really mean anything, and you're sort of being false humble. I think that's like one of the bigger challenges with LinkedIn is having a voice that isn't, I'm realistic and relatable, but I'm also really successful, so you should like follow me. As we look at these kind of different formats and how people have posted, what are some tips that you both could provide for an individual who wants to have a really nice voice on LinkedIn but doesn't want to come across as maybe unprofessional or maybe like overly professional by feeling, you know, too corporate with the body? Does that make sense? Jack, sure. You go first.
It is hard to like have a voice, and I think most people will probably like fall into like the world of AI. And actually, I know it's like the whole thing like, oh, everyone can post it. Some people don't like it and aren't very good at it. And I know it's definitely a skill. I think a lot of the nonsense that me and Zach write, it comes naturally because that's kind of our sense of humor back and forth on WhatsApp anyway. And most of the time when we're commenting or we're putting something stupid, it's not for the public, it's not for anyone else to see. I just put something like that I know that Zach will see. Somebody did something about BBC TV license. I saw that Zach, you saw this morning, didn't you, Zach? I just thought about the TV license and like getting a letter, and I just put, I think the copy's amazing. It's really scary. And the fact that the envelope is red really makes me want to open it. And I just know that somebody reading that might think, oh, that's a real sincere, nice comment. But I know that Zach will know that it's stupid. That makes me laugh.
This is the BBC sending out letters that their service has been turned. They haven't paid for the service.
Yeah.
And
they don't pay for the TV license.
They don't pay for the TV licenses or whatever.
No, I don't personally. Refuse to.
Okay. But it's a good point to bring up is that, you know, it comes out somewhat naturally, but posting for yourself as well. Zach, kind of what advice do you give to people, or would you give to somebody who wanted to have a better voice on LinkedIn and writing that line of like too much versus, you know, not enough and trying to hit that sweet spot?
I think the key with writing anything or any creative endeavor is that idea of like never refuse the muse. So like if you feel like you want to write something, just start writing something. But equally, if you feel like I've got nothing to say and I'm just doing it for the sake of it, don't bother. And often you can think of it like, I imagine something like Instagram, for example, started off as a means to almost like, oh, I can look back to last year and see like when my child was a bit younger or whatever. If you were to see LinkedIn as like, oh, I can just kind of post my journey as I go, as much for me or new people who are starting, that works, I think, much better than saying like, here's my rented Lamborghini and Rolex. So if someone's looking to get started and wanting to be genuine and authentic and all that good stuff, it'd probably just be that thing of, yeah, just never refuse the muse. If you feel up for it, do it. If you don't bother. Don't put too much pressure on yourself either. There's enough crap out there.
I love both of those. And I want to provide another piece of advice that I genuinely take from these two individuals. So from Zach and Jack, I take this advice from their post. So it's about like a small subversion of the status quo. So when I write a post, I don't refuse the muse. I speak very much like a corporate salesperson. I have that voice in me. I've been on LinkedIn since I was starting and turning into a cringy LinkedIn post, how long I've been on LinkedIn. But I've been on LinkedIn for a long time. And so I know the speak really well. And in order to kind of change the actual text itself would be quite a lot of work. So what I actually do is I'll write something that seems very innocuous, like very normal for LinkedIn. But if you read through it, you're going to realize that this joke isn't for everyone. This joke's for you who's reading three paragraphs in, like trying to figure out if this is real or not. And the joke is that it isn't, but you wouldn't know that until you read into it. And it's a good way for me to follow these two and have sort of that professional voice, but also like provide a little bit of humor and maybe just a more authenticity of who I am within that post. So sometimes it's just subverting the what's expected, right? Your end of your post could be something like you guys do this really funny thing. And you might have a couple of examples of this where you go through something very serious. Like I'm changing jobs. This is going to be an amazing year for me. And I'm going to be doing this, 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 and this. Oh, by the way, all of this was a joke. And I was just trying to get you to like this post. And you can do that. And it's so weird. It's so not funny, but it is at the same time. Like people laugh at it and it gives someone a reason to engage with you on LinkedIn more than just a like and a I agree with this, which I think is a great way to build a better community on LinkedIn. You both are really prolific in the new business development space. And I can't say this enough. Your company, Wham, and what you both do is so genuine to the space of I am here to talk to people, talk to human beings. And then if there's a fit for the opportunity, for the product, for the service, then it makes sense for us to have a conversation and then getting those meetings booked. And that's not all you do, but there's some real human elements to how you go approach your business. And I really love it. We don't have a lot of time left on this podcast, but you wrote a book as well. So tell people about your book, Sales as Therapy, and then a little bit about what you both do. And I'll give, you know, maybe one half to one of you and one half to the other. So someone cover Sales as Therapy, someone cover Wham, and then tell people where they can follow you.
So yeah, we run an agency called We Have a Meeting. We Have a Meeting is effectively an outsourced SDR agency. So typically we're brought in by businesses who there's not enough meetings in the diary, so the pipeline looks a little bit bleak. Or they're meeting people, but it's just the wrong types of people. They're trapped in these never-ending deal cycles. And they want not only more meetings, but more qualified meetings that actually go somewhere. So that's the problem people come to us with. And we solve that usually by picking up that bloody telephone.
Picking up the damn phone. I love it. That's so cool. All right. And Jack, tell us about Sales is Therapy.
So Sales is Therapy is a book that we wrote because we realized that the best sales techniques come from therapists. If you go back to Socrates, who invented CBT, a job of a salesperson is just to get you to think deeply so that you can attach emotion. So we realized that therapists do this really, really well. And the therapist isn't trying to sell you a bronze, silver or gold package. So we thought, what techniques can we take from them? We've taken all the ones that we've liked. We've created our own methodology. We've got a couple of different mindset tools. We like a lot of stoicism. So basically, we've taken all the bits that we like from everybody else. We've come up with our own methodology and our own approach. And we've called it Sales is Therapy. Because actually, if you can sell like a therapist, it's so much better than selling like a sleazy snake oilman.
Amen. And thank you all so much for spending some time with us. If you haven't, if you've gotten to this part of the episode and you haven't checked out our YouTube channel, go to youtube.com/salesgravy. You can watch this entire episode. We'll have all of the posts that we talked about up on the video as well. If you haven't followed Jack Frimston and Zach Thompson on LinkedIn, or We Have a Meeting, you've got to go do that right now. You haven't had enough laughs in your day if you haven't followed them yet. So go do that right now. Thank you all so much for being here on the Sales Gravy podcast, and we'll catch you next time. Nooks brings prospecting, emailing, and parallel dialing into one single workflow. Their AI agents handle the busy work so your reps can focus on what matters, live conversations. Stop wasting up to 80% of the day stitching tools together and start hitting your numbers with Nooks. Go to nooks.ai to see how artificial intelligence plus human intelligence equals more pipeline. That's nooks.ai, N-O-O-K-S.ai.